leaders in the world who are made for impact.
My purpose is liberation. I need to unleash the leaders around the executive owner.
Dr. Craig Overmeyer is one of them. I'm Gretchen Schott, and this is Made for Impact, a show for leaders who want to leave a lasting impact on their organizations, their teams, and their lives. I have known Dr. Overmeyer for a little over a year, and I have benefited from his coaching, guidance, and his expertise. Those of us who work closely with him call him Dr. O. He's the co-founder of Cultures That Work, and he provides services for businesses to grow and align using the scaling up methodology. As a coach, he works with privately held companies that range from $10 million to $100 million in gross revenues. As a scaling up certified coach, Dr. O is part of a select group of global coaches who facilitate the Four Decisions workshop to execute Mastering the Rockefeller Habits System. He's also a certified coach from the Neuro Leadership Institute. You may recognize him as the author of Accelerate Through Conflict, The Missing Conversations. Every time I interact with him, I learn something new about myself. I hope that that's your experience too. And now, let's go to the interview. Dr. O, thanks so much for being with me today. I'm so excited to talk with you.
Honored to be with you, Gretchen. Good to be here.
Tell our listeners a little bit about you, who you are, and what do you do?
So I'm an executive coach working with mid-market firms that, especially the entrepreneurs or founders who are very ambitious to grow their business and to scale up, that creates incredible complexity. And so it's like climbing a very difficult mountain, like Mount Everest. So I'm like a Sherpa. I help guide and direct executive teams who are facing the complexity of growth and basically overcome three barriers to growth. The first barrier is enough leaders throughout the culture to delegate, predict, and repeat. Scalable infrastructure where the systems and processes can keep up with the increased sales and really liberate the owner and executive team to have a lot of time and freedom to be focused on the marketplace. But actually, I define myself as a Baba. I'm a grandfather for Hadley, who's six, and a grandson coming. My wife was playing with Hadley, and Hadley says, "Gammy, come over here." She goes, "What?" She goes, "There's a corner over in my room. That's where I pray." She's 6 years old. And so she has a sacred space to go to. So I would just, for anyone, you're probably working your fanny off. You're probably very busy. Don't forget that really the only way we are successful is if we submit ourselves to the presence that made us. And we need time to recharge and get reconnected in whatever way you understand the creator in your life, and just to stay connected and have a space just for that. Just learn that from Hadley. She's pretty joyful.
Wisdom from Hadley might be like a blog or something.
I know. That's going to be my best-selling book finally. You know?
That's right. Well, you talked quite a bit about being a coach and a Sherpa. So how did you decide to become a coach?
I was a pastoral counselor at St. Vincent Hospital and had my own practice for about 20 years. And during that time, I was counseling and helping family business owners, going from the second to third and fourth generations. It's very emotional, complex, involves money and roles and positions. And I was trained to actually provide coaching for managers in these businesses, because often you know that engagement is dependent on the relationship with the manager. And so I began to really be immersed in the whole world of professional coaching. And then in 2007, I met Vern Harnish, who is the author of Mastering the Rockefeller Habits and Scaling Up Now. And so I've been working with that community of about 200 coaches around the world. So it evolved from just the realities of the complexity of having a business. And sometimes it's like dragging an anchor rather than having wind in your sails, and can be quite overwhelming for the founder to have confidence in the next generation, or for the next generation to actually embrace growth and really realize that how they got there isn't going to get them where they're going to be. You know, what got you here, we'll get you there concept. So
before you met Vern, were you thinking about being a coach, or were you,
well,
like,
no,
did you meet him?
I had retired from being a therapist in 1999, and I had been trained in real-time coaching and also neuro leadership coaching. And so I was certified and was providing coaching with small businesses and entrepreneurs. And the mid-market really means you have probably 25 to 50 employees up to about 600. And so that's the niche that I work with. And firms that I work with go from valuations of about 10 million to about 3 billion. And so that's the range of folks that I've been working with since 1999.
What is it about that little niche area in that middle that is so attractive to you versus working with really, really small or, you know, like really, really big enterprise? What is it about the middle that's attractive to you?
It's interesting. When Vern Harnish wrote his best-selling book, Scaling Up, I had a little bit of hand in just editing it, but nevertheless, we have this picture of when you're starting up, you're like a mouse and you're moving everywhere. You're doing everything. Then when you scale up, you're a gazelle. You're really going fast. And then when you're in the gazelle mode where it's 15 to 20% growth year after year, you continue to experience surprises because the old systems and processes, the leadership that you had, won't sustain you as you continue to face complexity. The complexity is exponential with each new hire. It's almost like, oh no, we got more business. The owner executive team then really has to go to an elite level. And oftentimes, one of the missing elements that I'm especially passionate about is the inability to have productive conflict. And it's actually a hidden barrier to growth. In family businesses, the conflict can get very destructive at times. At times, it's very friendly, but it's false harmony. So when I work with these mid-market firms, it's really to shore up who is on this executive team, and then can they have the behaviors of a cohesive team, which includes mastering conflict.
So you're obviously very passionate about Vern's work. Can you share just a little bit more about, if someone hasn't heard of the Rockefeller Habits or hasn't heard of Scaling Up, just maybe like quick highlights for folks that are now thinking, oh, I'm going to go buy this book. So what are maybe some highlights that you would share or why someone would be like, you're ready for this. You should be looking at this.
Yes. So it was over 20 years ago that there was a program at MIT called Birthing of Giants. And it was a roundtable cohort of CEOs. And this expert in studying growth firms, Vern Harnish, experienced pulling together, how do you get everybody on the same page? So it's literally one page. It's a one-page strategic plan. And then all the categories of decisions that you need to make was just out of his experience and research and the clients that he had. And so over those 20 years, Vern has attracted coaches who have to have the qualifications of being able to really understand and face the complexities that it's almost like a nightmare sometimes when you grow. It's not fun. So the promise is more time, more money, more fun. And I say more joy. If you've lost your joy and you're growing, you need some form of help. And often they'll go to a roundtable like Young Presidents Organization or Vistage, Truth at Work. Those are all really powerful. And at the same time, if you're going to scale this mountain is a metaphor, then it's vital to be with someone who's done it with several teams. That's my gift, is I've been able to do that with several teams, hundreds of executive leaders.
I know you also wrote a book, Accelerate Through Conflict, The Missing Conversation. What spurred you to write that book? Why did you write it and what were you hoping people would get from it?
If the owner is in the middle of everything, that's the bottleneck. And then if the owner or CEO, sometimes they've sold it, and if the owner and CEO don't develop an executive team that is living what Patrick Lencioni says is a cohesive team, where they are vulnerable with each other, vulnerability-based trust, that they master conflict, that they develop commitments with one another and with the whole culture, where everyone weighs in and buys in. They seek it first, then hold others to be accountable. And then it's a focus on collective results, not my own day. So that is what we've learned over these 20 years, that you have to have new habits. So mastering the Rockefeller habits was looking back at the most successful firm, the Standard Oil. And so John D. Rockefeller and his team had habits. The most executive, if you just grow your business and you're great, and you're lucky maybe sometimes, and you just figured out something to sell widgets or provide services, it doesn't mean you know how to develop the culture. And so there needs to be habits. So Rockefeller habits basically are, there are three. You need to know what is your number one priority and have just a few priorities every quarter, every year toward a bigger goal. Then you need to have data. Are we on or off track? And then finally, you need meeting rhythms, daily huddles, weekly meetings, strategic thinking time, quarterly recalibration sessions, annual planning. And so without the priorities, data, meeting rhythms, then like the mouse, you're going everywhere. At times. And it seems like everyone does a little bit of everything. And so in 2013, then it got more sophisticated. And the Scaling Up book came out. And so basically scaling up is you need to learn how to think strategically on a regular basis and drive that down into the whole culture so that everyone can, in one phrase, say, this is where this company is going and here's our purpose. And the core values are alive. And without a model and without a mindset shift, they're stuck in the middle. So that's what I provide, a model. It's not about me. It's about me developing others to get it done. And then you can get out of the middle of things. That is the executive team or the owner or CEO.
I love that you talked about mindset. I was just reading something earlier today, but this concept within learning and development of moving away from the idea of we're developing people's skills into we're actually developing mindsets. Like skills are important, but we need to shift thinking around mindset. And because if someone has a fixed mindset and, you know, oh gosh, if I do this wrong, I'm going to fail and I'm going to lose my job. There's no incentive really to adopt that skill then as a new habit or a new practice in their life. They're just doing it to get by versus changing their thoughts around that. I had not seen that before, but I love that idea of we're not just developing skill, we're developing mindset. And it's that paradigm shift around that.
You know, Carol Dweck wrote the book, A Growth Mindset. That is true. I've been certified by the Neuro Leadership Institute, and they have worked with Carol Dweck. And what they say is, wherever you are in the organization, you need to consider leadership is not a role. It's how you influence other people. And that if you're in a threat state or you put others in a threat state, that diminishes the business growth. It impacts it on innumerable levels. But a growth mindset then is that you're thinking, what did I learn from this? What lessons were there? Challenging each other's assumptions, rooting out biases in one another's thinking. And then coming together with better innovative ideas that otherwise you have groupthink. And so instilling a growth mindset is a huge component of any effective executive coaching.
So with all the groups and organizations that you've worked with, is there any organization that really stands out to you that you saw an incredible shift and change that was really exciting for you as a coach to be a part of?
I included in my book, Accelerated Through Conflict, two stories. One is the story of Burgeon Held. Andrew Held and Tag Burge in 2008 were attorneys. They were actually childhood friends who reconnected after they worked in some firms. And they created a business around multifamily housing. So they, for years until I met them in 2017, were doing most of the work themselves, getting deals. They're really good deal makers. They're incredible. And then finding the right who. Who will we bring in to help us that we can step out of the middle and then have these habits in place, have a one-page plan? They didn't have the model. And the mindset was, it's up to us. And so then they're stuck in the middle. And I chronicle their story that we use a lot of Jim Collins concepts. One is the business flywheel. And so we started to form and hire the right people that had the skills and the emotional intelligence. And this team formed and they were able to have productive conflict. And I was in the middle of helping that to become productive. It's not about them. It's about them creating leaders. And those leaders create leaders. And so it's a mindful leadership culture where everyone has an awareness of what's our purpose beyond profit. They have accelerated the business flywheel. The flywheel is this concept that Jim Collins wrote about. He helped Amazon, actually. Amazon, believe it or not, was years ago facing maybe collapse. And so Jim was coaching Jeff Bezos. And the concept of a flywheel is that you begin to think of the components of your business and how then they create growth. And you teach everyone, look, every part of your business impacts the other parts. So Andrew and Tag built their flywheel, which is a metaphor, but they helped them to understand, get A-plus property, you know, begin to then finance and build, create a property management team, continue to reinvest in the property, take those investments and find new properties. So then everyone began to see that, what is my role? And they're able to articulate that. And so then every quarter, every employee has their own one-page plan. So then that's super alignment. And the impact they're having on the lives of people who live in their apartments is amazing. They have beautiful apartments at a higher level of property management. And so in essence, I get to also help families have a great place to live.
You and I have talked about productive conflict quite a bit in this conversation already, and I think that's a word people use a lot. But I also wonder if people really understand what that looks like. I don't know that you would recognize it unless you've actually experienced it. So can you share, when you say productive conflict, what does that look like? What are the behaviors that you're seeing in a team or as you're engaging with someone else that you recognize, like, this is productive conflict versus unhealthy, restrictive kind of conflict?
Yeah, destructive.
Destructive, yeah.
There are only three things that naturally happen in all organizations: friction, confusion, and underperformance. Everything else requires leadership, right? See, most people have very negative. I say, what comes to your mind when you think of conflict? And it's negative for most people. We should not have conflict.
Fight. Everyone should avoid it. Yeah.
Yes. And so it's actually the natural friction, confusion, underperformance that occurs naturally in organizations. And so productive conflict is the ability then to recognize, what is my style? How do I show up during conflict? How do you show up? And then I need to be able to honor that. I don't impose my style. If I'm very directive, just get right to the point, and you need time to think and ponder. And if I dominate you, then that becomes destructive. There's actually 18 patterns of destructive conflict. And so basically, productive conflict, I've put into a four-step model. I call it in-the-moment conversations, where you honor, hey, you know yourself, but you also then have empathy for others. And it begins with having what I call regain focus. Hey, Susie, there's an issue with getting our delivery out in time. I think it's a concern I have. Do you have a few moments that we could talk about that? Rather than avoiding it and going to someone else and saying, did you see about Susie? So in the moment conversations then is basically, let's acknowledge the real challenge here. Then let's remember, well, what were we trying to do with our deliveries? Weren't we talking about having on-time deliveries and this is behind schedule? We get focused on the reality. What is our goal? And then we fill the gap. So you build alignment, say, okay, you're right. Our goal was to have on-time delivery. Here's three things we've learned. Now let's build some new habits. So it's very much productive conflict.
I sometimes think individuals who struggle with conflict or individuals who would say, like, oh, I avoid conflict, assume that there's going to be opposition, assume that there's going to be judgment. And the way in which you're describing it is really kind of moving that judgment away, because it's just about clarity. But it starts with, you have to be in control of your own self. You have to know yourself, like, I'm too hot to handle on this right now. Or I have my own kind of fears, which I'm bringing into this, which aren't really relevant to what anyone is saying. Like, is what I'm thinking true? Is it really true? And then, like, this is what we're actually trying to accomplish. So I like that.
We all have automatic judgments or thoughts. And I think that the beginning of productive conflict is for me to step back and not presume something about another person and ask myself, is what I'm thinking true? Am I exaggerating? And is there another way that I can think about this? And typically, that's the key to turn a conversation to be very productive, open. I have a phrase that took me 20 years to write. It's mainly this, that if we listen to learn, ask to empower, we'll have much more collaborative, innovative ideas. Too often, managers in particular want to hear to fix, tell to solve. And even colleagues together, someone becomes a bully at work and they're not even a leader, or someone is overriding the thoughts of other people. And that's here to fix, tell to solve, here to fix, tell to solve. Listen to learn, ask to empower, has within it the emotional intelligence. Hey, I know myself. I need to step back. I'm going to be empathetic and more deeply understand this other person. And then ask questions that evoke some new insights. That is how I've given some form to what many other authors have given. I've just collected it in my way and made it a four-step model. Regain focus, craft a shared vision, build an organizational alignment, champion execution habits.
Yeah. Every time I talk with you, I feel like you take things that are super complex and you just dumb it down and make it so simple. And I'm like, yes, yes, I get it now. I get it now. I love that.
Well, I'm 71. I need to do that for myself.
Well, I think it's one of your gifts.
When we have insight, it's usually someone says something, it just changes how we think about something. And we want to grab a hold of those insights. And especially, let's go back to the CEOs and owners or executive team. I think they need a healthy blend of here to fix, tell to solve sometimes. But most of the time, listen to learn, ask to empower. So if there's anyone listening, if that helps you, I really want you to consider that if you want to get more done with and through others and accelerate that business flywheel like Andrew and Tag are doing, they have instilled within the culture, Let's don't let things pass. Let's be polite. Let's bring up tough situations. Let's address issues before it becomes crucial conversations. So the book Crucial Conversations sold millions of copies. I'm yet to get to that point, but I'm saying let's have in the moment conversations before it's crucial.
Yeah. I love the listen to learn too, because I believe often people believe that they're being good listeners, but what they're listening for is to affirm what they believe, or they're listening to then deny what they're hearing. They're not listening to learn. I really think that's powerful. And then, you know, the asking to empower, I think, is also a really wonderful statement, because too often I think folks are, you know, I have sales in my background and we were always taught, you know, to do the assumptive close, right? Just ask questions so that they're saying yes, so they're saying yes, so they're saying yes. And the asking to empower is not you having to come up with any of those answers. You're asking to have something revealed to you that that person can then also own.
I know you're very good at this. I know I've seen you train. That's very much a part of who you are. The one tip I would suggest is that if you summarize, then the question will materialize and it's not interrogated. Sometimes someone may be listening to this and they'll go and ask a bunch of questions. That's awful. Do not do that. It's like, well, Sally, since the delivery didn't get out on time, how would you evaluate yourself on a scale of 1 to 10 to work with your team to get this done? I don't know her answer. If you know the answer, do not ask a question. Just be direct. If you're a leader and you ask leading questions, it's worse. Just be directive and just order people around. But if you want to listen to learn, you have to prove you've heard what they've said and you summarize and you listen and you're learning and then you ask a question you don't know the answer to, because then that person has a chance to feel safe to come up with an insight. And you can't scale your business if you keep over-directing people. It's absolutely the truth. It's my experience.
That's what I was going to ask you, is what's something you wish all business leaders would do or embrace more of?
It's not about them. It's about the leader in the person that they're inspiring. I think everyone should understand Daniel Goleman's seminal work. It's in a book called Primal Leadership. And what he did is there was years of research that they looked at 6 styles of leadership. And it's akin to the concept of situational leadership, that if you are an owner, executive leader, go back to Harvard Business Review, Leadership That Gets Results, read that article, and then follow up. The Korn Ferry has a tremendous amount of workbooks that you're familiar with, where there are 6 styles of leadership. Get that workbook and look, what style of leadership do I tend to overuse? And what styles do I need to use? Then there's 6 dimensions of climate. What is the climate I'm creating? I think every leader needs to know my leadership has an emotional component. 70% I dominate those around me because I'm the leader. And I have to be very careful how that influence is there, because I'm creating a climate. And Korn Ferry has shown that the right leadership style creates a climate that can increase or decrease productivity up to 30%, positive or negative. And so the other term I would really highly recommend everyone understand is, author called Aubrey Daniels wrote the book Bringing Out the Best in Your People. And he says, you create discretionary effort when you reinforce the behavior you want. Most ill-advised conversations at work when something went wrong is having too much energy about what went wrong. Learn what went wrong. And then when they're doing it right, that's it. Way to go, you guys. You're on it. And if you build discretionary effort in the book Think and Grow Rich, that's what he calls doing that little bit of extra. And so that's when you can scale, because then as the owner or executive team, your main job is to develop leaders who do discretionary effort. And you create a climate where everyone can work hard, be really invested, and at the same time have a purpose greater than themselves and have the capacity to handle the friction, confusion, and underperformance that Peter Drucker said is so natural for all organizations.
Where would you say is your impact in the world, or where do you believe is your life's purpose?
My purpose is liberation. I need to unleash the leaders around the executive owner. Usually it's the owner or executive team. Is I liberate them from the drama of daily operations. They're sucked into the drama. They're tolerating underperformance. And they fail to get everyone on the same page. So the one word is liberation. If you're still in the middle of your business, you are the bottleneck. If you're the owner, you're the executive leader, you're the bottleneck for scaling up, and then you'll have to be overly directive and manage people. Stop managing people. You need to lead people, manage results, And it's, you're liberated from being in the middle because you have a model that you can help everyone with a mindset. So three M's, mindset that they can own this, they can get it done. And you give them some autonomy, some guardrails, but within these guardrails, get this done with and through your team. By the way, I say executive leader. I'm not talking about a role. I'm talking about it's part of the brain called the prefrontal cortex. Most people, when they do not enjoy their work, are in their limbic system. They're in fight or flight. Fight or flight. They wake up, they're the owner, they're worried, they're overwhelmed, they're dragging an anchor, there's not wind in the sails, they don't trust, they don't get weigh-in and buy-in, they have to fire people, how do I get the right people? It can be a living nightmare. So the executive coaching is simply this. That's why I hope I provide simple ideas. It's the executive function of the brain. It's about the width of a napkin, the size of a credit card in the prefrontal cortex. Literally, it shuts down when most people go to work and they've lost their joy. So growth mindset is someone can think like that and work really hard, but enjoy it and know how to recharge. That's the other thing, is that executive leaders need to recharge like Charlie's doing. Otherwise, through their exhaustion, they micromanage, they don't trust, they hold on. Then the second generation, they don't even want to be a part of it. Or if they do, they repeat what you did. Or the third generation.
Dr. O, if somebody listening wanted to reach out to you and talk with you more or talk to you about being their coach or anything, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Yeah, my website is culturesthatwork.com, and I have a team of coaches, so I would be more than glad to help someone find a coach. It's rare that I can take more coaching now, but I would really be glad to help someone think that through. If you want to take your team into a community where you'll get feedback that you could never get even from just a coach, please go to culturesthatwork.com. If they take the assessment, there's a pop-up. I hate pop-ups, but we have a pop-up. But it says, look, just take a 4-minute assessment. We can help you better. So if they go to Cultures That Work and take the assessment, then it connects me or my team. And I'll talk to anyone to help you think this through, because I'm free. I have a lot of freedom myself of who I work with and time.
Wonderful. Dr. O, thank you so much for the conversation and sharing your wisdom with us. I know I have benefited from it, and I just appreciate the conversation so much. Remember that you are made for impact. I'd love to connect with you. Hit me up or follow me on LinkedIn. Until then, I'll be looking for more stories from great leaders to share with you.